Amanda Seyfried, Gael Garcia Bernal, and Vanessa Redgrave. Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Midland health leaders stated Monday that they will begin administering COVID vaccinations January 25th at the Horseshoe Complex by appointment only. According to the Midland Unified Command Team, which includes leaders from the hospital district, city, and county, leaders are anticipating receipt of a large weekly supply of COVID-19 vaccine and will administer doses to Phase 1A, healthcare workers, and 1B, over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease individuals. Those individuals that are part of either phase and those that have not had COVID-19 in the past 90 days can register to get on the list for distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine by visiting midlandhealth.org/vaccine and clicking on the Click to Register button. A phone line is being set up for those without internet access. Once on the waiting list, a person will not receive a phone call to be scheduled according to a press release. A person will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email or text message with the information needed. If a person already put his or her name on the Midland Health Department list but does not qualify for the 1A or 1B distribution, that name will be removed and the person will need to reapply at a later date. Once a person has a confirmed date, time of vaccine, he or she will need to make sure they complete all forms online that are sent prior to arriving for the vaccine. Failure to complete the registration process prior to arrival may delay one's vaccination. Please take a valid picture ID with you to your appointment, arrive on time, and wear a short sleeve or sleeveless shirt, the press release stated. If a jacket is needed, make sure it is easy to remove. The Horseshoe facility is located at 2514 Arena Trail. Enter the Horseshoe parking lot from either Garfield or the I-20 service road. Follow signage and volunteers around the Horseshoe property to the north side and park near the backstage building. A map of the location is available at midlandhealth.org/vaccine. If unable to drive, Easy Rider will be providing bus routes to the Horseshoe vaccine location from the downtown transfer center at 15 minutes after each hour. Bus routes are available at ez-rider.org/routes/html. For further questions, visit midlandhealth.org/vaccine.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Friday, January 22nd, 2021 from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up today, I'm going to do the program in a slightly different way. Normally, I will read short articles first, and then as we have time, I'll try to read longer pieces that I might have come upon that would be of interest. Today, I'm going to do it the opposite way because I have some articles that I would really like to read for you, and they're just sitting here. So I'd like to get through those first. If we have time for shorter articles, I will read those. But I will read the headlines to the shorter articles just so you can get an idea of what's going on today. We'll do those headlines in our coronavirus briefs coming up in a moment. But first, we'll take a look at the numbers. Because I'm not getting consistent numbers from Ector or Midland counties at this point, I'm taking these statistics from the status report on the Johns Hopkins University dashboard. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 12,811. There are 342 new cases since the previous day. The county fatality rate is 2.15. For Midland County, confirmed cases are 13,848. There have been 514 new cases since the previous day, and the county fatality rate is 1.50%. From the Texas Tribune, we'll look at the Texas numbers. Average new cases again decreased by 1,515 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 21st, 18,370 new confirmed cases and 3,052 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 488 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 21st, 13,564 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 17 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 21st, 441 new deaths were reported. Now we'll look at coronavirus briefs, and I'll also read headlines to some of these shorter articles, which I will hope to get to toward the end of the program. The United States reported 188,952 new coronavirus infections and 3,955 virus-related fatalities on Thursday, according to Johns Hopkins University data. According to JHU's tally, the nationwide totals now stand at 24,627,882 cases, including 410,105 deaths. Vaccine numbers. At least 37,960,000 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 17,546,374 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. About 900,000 people filed for new jobless claims as Biden inherits one of the worst job markets of any president. Biden signed an order Thursday requiring masks in airports and on many planes, trains, ships, and intercity buses. Nearly 2,000 COVID-19 vaccines in Massachusetts were compromised after a freezer plug was accidentally loosened. People waited up to 5 hours to get vaccinated at Dodger Stadium, Los Angeles mayor says. 7,500 vaccinated healthcare workers will be among the 22,000 fans at this year's Super Bowl. Tokyo governor denies rumors the Olympics will be canceled. Fauci says vaccinations will help coronavirus variants from emerging. Baylor students must test weekly for COVID-19. Those who keep missing tests could lose Wi-Fi access. And now here are headlines from shorter articles that hopefully we can get to today. If not, we will read some of these on Monday. Johnson & Johnson will have 100 million COVID-19 vaccines for Americans by April, says board member. COVID-19 vaccine second doses may be scheduled up to 6 weeks later, CDC says. Fauci forecasts a degree of normality this fall if enough Americans get vaccinated. Drug prevents virus infections in nursing homes, maker claims. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine trial for kids is now fully enrolled. We got to get into trenches to figure out what's wrong with the vaccine rollout, says Fauci. Fauci says it probably won't make a difference if second vaccine doses are delayed by a couple of weeks. CDC is still working on the goal to double coronavirus sequences to expand hunt for mutations. Good timing could help Biden administration's vaccine strategy, but challenges remain. About 6 in 10 Americans don't know when or where to get a COVID-19 vaccine, study finds. We're going to begin our longer articles looking close to home and starting with the Texas Tribune with two stories. Our first is, facing a crush of COVID-19 patients, ICUs are completely full in at least 50 Texas hospitals, by Marissa Martinez and Carla Astudio, published January 22nd. Hidalgo County Health Authority Ivan Melendez says coming into COVID-19 units nowadays feels like going through a non-linear version of the 5 stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. You cry, he told the Tribune. There's a lady that I'm taking care of that I've known since I was a child. We grew up together, and I know she's going to die. It's the same thing. We got together for Christmas. Now we're seeing the ramification of it. Across Texas, hospital intensive care units are being battered as COVID-19 cases continue to rise in a post-holiday surge. Dozens of facilities have reported that their ICUs have been at or above 100% capacity for weeks, leaving staff overworked and stretched thin. More than 50 Texas hospitals are currently reporting that their ICUs are 100% full or higher, and a dozen of them have been full for more than half of the 24 weeks since hospitals began reporting that information in July, according to a Texas Tribune analysis of data released by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For example, Rio Grande Region Hospital in McAllen and HCA Houston Healthcare Medical Center in Houston have been over 100% for 23 and 22 weeks, respectively. Though statewide hospitalizations due to COVID-19 seem to be stabilizing, there is still cause for concern, said Chris Van Dusen, a spokesperson for the Texas Department of State Health Services. Across Texas, there are around 600 available ICU beds, a fraction of the couple of 1,000 that were open in the spring as the pandemic began. Van Dusen said the pandemic has seemed to hit different regions in waves. Currently, the Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, and San Antonio areas are seeing significant spikes in COVID-19 cases, according to DSHS data. Health officials in Laredo have sent emergency alerts pleading with residents to stay home because local ICUs have reached capacity within the past month. Currently, COVID-19 patients take up almost half of that region's hospital capacity, according to DSHS data, the highest percentage in the state. Many cities have had to divert patients to other hospitals as their local ICUs overflow, in addition to expanding and converting available beds to treat ICU patients. Melendez said counting available ICU beds doesn't give the full picture at Texas hospitals because they are constantly adjusting to accommodate more patients. If an ICU is technically full, he said, many hospitals can still convert some available beds or units outside of that ward to give patients ICU care. Hendrick Health Chief of Staff Stephen Lowry said his hospital in Abilene has used both diversion and bed conversion. Currently, the facility is operating at 160% capacity, which is down from a peak of 180%, he said. Hendrick Health is the regional referral center for 24 surrounding counties, but Lowry said the hospital hasn't been able to meet the area's needs because they don't have any more space for new patients. They created all the new space they could in the spring before the pandemic struck. It's really frustrating, Lowry said. You hear stories from out in the community or family members that may have relatives in one of these outlying cities, and they're having trouble getting their loved ones into a higher level of care because not just Hendrick, but a lot of other facilities around the state are full and unable to accept the transfers. Texas Health Fort Worth, one of Tarrant County's busiest hospitals, reported hitting 100% ICU capacity on January 8th, according to HHS data. The hospital's president, Joseph DeLeon, said like many other medical centers, the Texas Health Resources Network has tried to relieve the pressure by canceling non-critical outpatient procedures. But so far, measures that helped during the summer COVID-19 surge haven't worked as well in the winter, DeLeon said. We thought, well, okay, now we have some experience from back in July. We kind of know what it's going to look like. But the second surge was different. There were many more critically ill patients this time around, DeLeon told the Tribune. This time, we have had much more stress on the staff, much more stress on the physicians. It was just a test of endurance. Cynthia Simmons is Arlington's public health authority and an emergency room physician at Medical City of Arlington, which has been at or near 100% capacity for weeks. She said Texans should understand that if they get into car accidents, have heart attacks, or face other non-COVID-19 emergencies, a full ICU at the nearest hospital could mean there may not be enough resources available. We're at a point now where we have so much COVID in our community. It's so easily spread. that the same things we've been talking about from public health measures from day one are really important now, Simmons said. I'm aware that people are tired of that, but it's really, really important at this juncture, at this time, that we continue those measures to help save the capacity in our hospitals. Simmons added that people should not delay care if they need it, because emergency rooms are adept at managing both COVID-19 and non-COVID-19 patients, even when they're full. Simmons and other Texas healthcare workers have expressed hope for the future after Texas's vaccination process began on December 14th. Tens of thousands have gotten a second dose already, though millions of people who are now eligible are still waiting for Texas to receive enough doses to vaccinate the healthcare workers, long-term care residents, people over 65, and certain health conditions for those who compromise groups 1A and 1B. But the ICU bed crunch is far from over. Though hospitalizations are not currently increasing at December's higher rates, a more contagious COVID-19 variant identified in Harris County on January 7th could cause hospitalizations to rise more sharply as it spreads. While it may not make people sicker or affect the death rate, the mutation means the virus could spread faster and infect more people, said Stephen Love, president and CEO of the Dallas-Fort Worth Hospital Council. As a result, more hospitalizations, more capacity issues, Love said. For the next 3 to 4 weeks, it's absolutely critical for us to monitor and try to get the word out to people to please do what they need to do to tamp down the spiral. Here's our second story from the Texas Tribune. Dan Patrick asks Texas to revise coronavirus vaccine distribution plan as eligible people experience frustration trying to locate a dose, by Alex Samuels, published January 21st. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is asking the state to refine its vaccine rollout program, a move he says will help give Texans a clearer idea as to when they can reasonably expect to receive their injections of the coronavirus vaccine. His request comes as distribution of the vaccine in Texas has been beset with miscommunication and technical issues that have created confusion for patients and providers, even as Texas outpaces other states in administering the vaccine. Texas in phases 1A and 1B of the vaccine rollout, which includes frontline healthcare workers, residents of long-term facilities, Texans who are 65 years and older, and those who are at least 16 with certain chronic medical conditions, are already eligible to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Right now in many cities and counties, when an announcement of available vaccinations is made, website sign-up pages crash and phone calls go unanswered, Patrick wrote. Texans need to have a better understanding of the time it will take for everyone to be vaccinated in order to reduce lines, confusion, and frustration. In a Thursday letter to the chair of the state's expert vaccination allocation panel, Patrick urged subgroups for Texans in Phase 1B, Texans 65 years and older, and those who are at least 16 with certain chronic medical conditions, so that the more than 4 million plus Texans and those with chronic conditions don't all expect to get their vaccination at the same time, something we know is not possible. This would help give people an idea of reasonable expectations and reduce wait times and frustrations each week, Patrick wrote in his letter, which was addressed to Imelda Garcia, chair of the panel. Patrick suggested the state reserve 2 weeks to vaccinate just those who are ages 75 and older, a subset of 1B, once current vaccine appointments are honored. After that's completed, Patrick suggested vaccinating all teachers and school staff over 65, and then vaccinating others over 65, broken down into smaller groups by either birth year, month, or day. Of course, your expert panel may come up with better or different ideas than I have offered to give the public clearer guidance and predictability of when they can be vaccinated, Patrick continued. At a press conference earlier this week, Governor Greg Abbott praised the state's vaccine rollout as officials warned the COVID-19 pandemic is at its worst here. Texas is outpacing other states in administering the vaccine, last week topping 1 million total doses administered. As of Tuesday, Texas was set to receive 333,650 more first doses of COVID-19 vaccine for 260 providers across the state, including nearly 80 hubs capable of focusing on large community vaccination efforts. As the state began the massive undertaking of distributing the coronavirus vaccine, its early rollout experienced data problems that left state officials with immunization and dose information that was outdated, incomplete, and sometimes misleading. That data wasn't used to dole out vaccines during the early weeks administering shots. The federal government allocated doses basically largely on population, but will likely start using the vaccination rate, how fast doses are getting into arms, as at least part of the allocation process, health officials have said. In the letter to Garcia, Patrick thanked Abbott for his leadership on the state's vaccine distribution plan and hailed state officials for doing a good job on vaccine rollout. Better than most states, Patrick said. Now an article from the New York Times. What you can do to avoid the new coronavirus variant right now. It's more contagious than the original and spreading quickly. Upgrade your mask and double down on precautions to protect yourself. By Tara Parker Pope, published January 19th. New variants of the coronavirus continue to emerge, but one in particular has caused concern in the United States because it's so contagious and spreading fast. To avoid it, you'll need to double down on the same pandemic precautions that kept you safe so far. The variant, known as B117, which was first identified in Britain, doesn't appear to cause more severe disease, but it has the potential to infect an estimated 50% more people. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has predicted that this variant could become the dominant source of infection in the United States by March. Variants with the same mutation have been reported in Brazil and South Africa, and now scientists are studying whether a variant with a different mutation, and first found in Denmark, along with one identified in California, have caused a surge of cases in California. The new variant spreading in the United States appears to latch onto our cells more efficiently. The change suggests it could take less virus and less time in the same room with an infected person for someone to become ill. People infected with the variant may also shed larger quantities of virus, which increases the risk to people around them. The exact mechanism in which it's more transmissible isn't entirely known, said Nathan D. Grubaugh, assistant professor and epidemiologist at the Yale School of Public Health. It might just be that when you're infected, you're exhaling more infectious virus. So how do you avoid a more contagious version of the coronavirus? I spoke with some of the leading virus and infectious disease experts about what makes the new variant so worrisome and what we can do about it. Here's what they had to say. How can I protect myself from the new coronavirus variant? The variant spreads the same way the coronavirus has always spread. You're most likely to contact the virus if you spend time in an enclosed space breathing the air of an infected person. The same things that have protected you from the original strain should help protect you from the variant, although you may need to be more rigorous. Wear a 2- or 3-layer mask. Don't spend time indoors with people who are not from your household. Avoid crowds and keep your distance. Wash your hands often and avoid touching your face. The first thing I say to people is that it's not a different virus. All the things we have learned about this virus still apply, said Dr. Ashish K. Jha, Dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. It's not like this variant is somehow magically spreading through other means. Anything risky under the normal strain just becomes riskier with the variant. And let's face it, after months of pandemic living, many of us have become lax about our COVID safety precautions. Maybe you've let down your guard and you're spending time indoors and unmasked with trusted friends. Or perhaps you've been dining in restaurants or making more trips to the grocery store each week than you did at the start of the lockdowns. The arrival of the variant means you should try to cut back on potential exposures where you can and double down on basic precautions for the next few months until you and the people around you get vaccinated. The more I hear about the new variants, the more concerned I am, said Lindsay Marr, professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech and one of the world's leading aerosol scientists. I think there is no room for error or sloppiness in following precautions, whereas before we might have been able to get away with letting one slide. Should I upgrade my mask? You should be wearing a high-quality mask when you run errands, go shopping, or find yourself in a situation where you're spending time indoors with people who don't live with you, Dr. Marr said. I am now wearing my best mask when I go to the grocery store, she said. The last thing I want to do is get COVID-19 in the month before I get vaccinated. Dr. Marr's lab recently tested 11 mask materials and found that the right cloth mask, properly fitted, does a good job of filtering viral particles of the size most likely to cause infection. The best mask has three layers, two cloth layers with the filter sandwiched in between. Masks should be fitted around the bridge of the nose and be made of flexible material to reduce gaps. Head ties create a better fit than ear loops. If you don't want to buy a new mask, a simple solution is to wear an additional mask when you find yourself in closer proximity to strangers. I wear a single mask when I walk my dog or exercise outdoors, but if I'm going to a store, taking a taxi, or getting in the subway, I double mask by using a disposable surgical mask and covering it with my cloth mask. Do I need an N95 medical mask? While medical workers who come into close contact with sick patients rely on the gold standard N95 masks, you don't need that level of protection if you're avoiding group gatherings, limiting shopping trips, and keeping your distance from others. N95s are hard to get, said Dr. Jha. I don't think people should think that's what they need. Certainly, there are a lot of masks out in the marketplace that are pretty good. If you're working in an office or grocery store or find yourself in a situation where you want added mask protection, you can get an alternative to the N95. Dr. Jha suggested using a KF94 mask, a type of mask made in South Korea that can be purchased easily online. It resembles an N95 with some differences. It's made of a similar non-woven material that blocks 94% of the hardest-to-trap viral particles. But the KF94 has ear loops instead of elastic headbands, so it won't fit as snugly as an N95. The KF94 is also disposable. You can buy a pack of 20 for about $40 on Amazon. While you can let a KF94 mask air dry and reuse it a few times, it can't be laundered and won't last as long as a cloth mask. One solution is to save your KF94 mask for higher-risk situations, like riding a subway, spending time in a store, or going to a doctor's appointment. Use your cloth mask for outdoor errands, exercise, or walking the dog. Are there additional ways to reduce my risk? Getting the vaccine is the ultimate way to reduce risk. But until then, take a look at your activities and try reducing the time and number of exposures to other people. For instance, if you now go to the store two or three times a week, cut back to just once a week. If you've been spending 30 to 45 minutes in the grocery store, cut your time down to 15 or 20 minutes. If the store is crowded, come back later. If you're waiting in line, be mindful of staying at least 6 feet apart from the people ahead of you and behind you. Try delivery or curbside pickup if that's an option for you. If you've been spending time indoors with other people who aren't from your household, consider skipping those events until you and your friends get vaccinated. If you must spend time with others, wear your best mask, make sure the space is well ventilated, open windows and doors, and keep the visit as short as possible. It's still the safest thing to take your social plans outdoors. And if you're thinking about air travel, it's a good idea to reschedule, given the high number of cases around the country and the emergence of the more contagious variant. The new variants are making me think twice about my plan to teach in person, which would have been with masks and with good ventilation anyway, Dr. Marr said. They're making me think twice about getting on an airplane. There is a bit more to the story, but we are almost out of time, so I'm going to wrap up at this point. Coming up next, we'll bring you Entertainment Weekly magazine to take us to 2 o'clock. Then we'll have USA Today. At 3 o'clock, it's our local news broadcast, and here are some of the articles our volunteers have been reading today. Report says average home still selling for more than $340,000. Victoria Prince, team owner, expects inventory to drop to around 500 by the end of the summer. Gas prices still below average from year ago. Biden's climate steps could have big impact on energy firms. From the Odessa American, mass effort begins Sunday. Don't show up at Ratliff today or Saturday for vaccine. And Murray and Blitch talk Ector non-renewal. That's coming up at 3, and then at 6, the Wall Street Journal, followed by a dose of relief from the heavy news with our program On the Lighter Side, with some very humorous readings that are coming up for you at 7 o'clock tonight. As always, thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back Monday at 1. Have a great weekend.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Call 211 for non-emergency help hotline and get connected to existing help services in Odessa. Also, OPD is asking Odessans to file reports online rather than requesting an officer. To file a report via phone, phone 335-4961. Again, that's 335-4961.
Throughout the week, we bring you health and accessibility programming. Mondays at 10 a.m., keystrokes. Mondays at 5 p.m., the assistive tech update. Mondays at 5:30 p.m., blind abilities. Wednesdays at 10 a.m., the blindness and disability news hour. The AARP report and the diabetic news programs fill out the hours Thursdays at 4 a.m. and 10 a.m., and Sundays at 6 p.m. Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Entertainment Weekly, the January 2021 issue, and I'm your reader, Elizabeth Smith, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we're going to start with the part of the magazine that is the best and worst of 2020. A hell of a year. There was no cure for 2020, but great art was newly essential in a socially distanced world, by Darren Franich. This is normally the time for a fun look back at the best and worst of the pop culture year. Anyone out there feeling normal? Anyone out there feeling best? Distract yourself from global calamities by merely worrying about the disasters the pandemic brought to show business. In 2019, Disney released 7 movies that grossed more than $1 billion. This year, there's no such thing as a billion-dollar movie. The company is reorganizing itself into a Disney Plus content farm while it waits for its theme parks to fully reopen. The Mulan reboot was supposed to be a step forward for on-screen representation and one of several Disney releases steered by female directors. Instead, Black Widow and Eternals will see us later, and Mulan's at-home release brought the kind of controversy that results in multiple headlines about internment camps. The studio's woes are not unique, and they sum up just how many tipping points defined 2020. Protests and pandemic collided in a perfect storm of social awakening, energizing a years-long reckoning with Hollywood's systemic failings. Splash Mountain will no longer sing the Song of the South, and the hottest take of the summer declared that Hamilton, the Broadway sensation-turned-Disney Plus hit, was too conservative. Start with Disney, though, to explain the power of great entertainment in this terrible year. The vanishing of all non-twitchable athletics meant that ESPN, the company's sports showcase, turned The Last Dance into a mass addiction, recasting 90s Superman Michael Jordan as an obsessive anti-hero. Meanwhile, the rise of Disney Plus reflected streaming's newfound centrality. Consider the freak show hysteria for Tiger King, the rediscovery of Avatar: The Last Airbender, the Emmy-sweeping adoration of Schitt's Creek. That's all directly attributable to Netflix, the face HBO Max yearns to see in the mirror. It was a year of delays and cancellations. Artists are often defined by their limitations, and in 2020, new connections were formed by an industry cut off from its normal rhythms. Timbaland and Swiss Beatz made Versus into a live streaming showcase for a few generations of musical legends. Late night hosts found a different energy broadcasting remotely. The only thing keeping me sane was Jesus and Mero's twice-weekly Zoom session. Taylor Swift went home and recorded her most acclaimed album in years. And Megan Thee Stallion didn't miss a beat on her journey to omnipresent megastardom. Sarah Cooper started lip-syncing Donald Trump on TikTok, and now people my age understand what TikTok is. John Krasinski's Some Good News became such an immediate ritual that CBS bought it, and now people TikTok age understand what selling out is. I miss movie theaters and feel nostalgic for our dumb arguments about big action movies. Yet there was a strange grace in our de-blockbusterized film culture. The lack of superheroes meant Delroy Lindo's stunning Da Five Bloods performance was the summertime event. A drought of Hollywood crises coincidentally marked a dominant year for female auteurs, seven of whom appeared on our movie critics' Leia Greenblatt's top 10 lists. There was no shortage of comfort food, and I'm not just talking about all the bread everyone on Instagram claimed they were baking. But pop culture also offers catharsis, as audiences sought insight into our strange new reality. That's why 2011's Contagion was suddenly regarded as a prophetic classic, and why Elizabeth Moss's star turn in The Invisible Man transcended its palpable Me Too resonance to become a vital portrait of death at every corner paranoia. Let's not sugarcoat this. Movie theaters are bankrupt. Live performance is on life support. Bookstores struggle on good days, and there are no good days. Television was unstoppable for months, but even Wile E. Coyote had to look down eventually, and autumn saw cancellations. The Quibi crash and productions paused by positive tests. Stay safe, Superstore. It was a great year for video game sales, however, and at the risk of sounding unbearably parental, the last thing we needed was a medical reason to retreat into digital infinity. No offense, Animal Crossing. Still, there are reasons for hope. After years of corporate bromides about diversity, the awakening force of global anti-racism demonstrations led to progressive action in Hollywood. Oscar's diversity requirements, CBS's plan to de-Caucasianize its reality TV, the implicit promise that Johnny Depp will be less employed in the future. Well, none of these plans are perfect, but they are a start. It's always darkest and all that. The next president listens to scientists, so that's a big improvement already. In a moment of despair, think of Ben Affleck. A couple of years ago, the one-time Argo Oscar winner was a meanie, unfortunately, tattooed tabloid casualty. Now, he's rocketing off comeback reviews for The Way Back toward an intriguing slate of projects. Against all odds and good sense, he will play Batman again. Not what I wanted for Christmas, frankly, but I'll support any multiverse big enough to include Harley Quinn. So, when they tell you things will never be normal again, tell them Earth will rise like a very colorful phoenix, soaring out of ashes inked on somebody's back. 2020 was the absolute worst. 2021 won't have to try too hard to be the best. Continuing the best and worst of 2020, movies, number one, The Year's Best Films by Leah Greenblatt. And number one is Nomadland. Tone poem, nouveau western, elegy for the American dream. Nomadland can feel like all of these things and more. Much of the drama in Chloe Zhao's starkly unadorned portrait of a widowed Nevadan named Fern, played by Frances McDormand, who learns to fit her entire world into a van, happens in small, almost imperceptible moments. There are long days laboring in Amazon warehouses or potato fields, endless stretches of tarmac and rest stops, even a bittersweet hint of romance with a fellow vagabond, played by David Strathairn. That the movie manages to serve as both a grim reckoning of our nation's frayed safety net and a celebration of a sort of middle-aged manifest destiny is certainly a testament to Zhao's deceptively spare script. But it's the dreamlike, richly textured soul of her story that stays, a new kind of cinematic classic, painfully made for these times. Number two is Minari. Korean immigrant Jacob, played by Steven Yeun, dreams of a plot of Arkansas land to call his own. His dubious wife, played by Yuri Han, just wants some stability for the young family. Chung's 80-set dramedy, winner of Sundance's Grand Jury Prize, is the kind of indie gem you wait for, a small, exquisitely acted story with a huge heart. Number three on the best is Soul. Directed by Pete Docter and Kemp Powers. When Pixar is good, it is very, very good. When it's great, it can touch the profound. Soul, about a jazz pianist voiced by Jamie Foxx, who finds himself trapped in purgatory on the eve of his big break, feels as tender and funny and gorgeously human as anything on the screen this year. Number four, First Cow, directed by Kelly Reichardt. Stop us if you heard this one before. A pair of Gold Rush prospectors, a biscuit recipe, a contraband dairy cow. Though the latest from Reichardt's, who did Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cutoff, may play like a shambolic tale of male friendship and flaky pastry, there's a sneaky transcendence at the center of it all. 5. The White Tiger, directed by Raman Barani. A sprawling technicolor melodrama about class and caste and destiny in modern-day India? Let the Slumdog Millionaire comparisons come. Tiger may share some surface similarities, including a star-making turn for its ambitious young hero, played here by Adarsh Gaurav, but the enchantment is entirely its own. Number 6, Emma, directed by Autumn de Wilde. As delectable as a tower of pastel macaroons and nearly as hard to resist, De Wilde's tart take on Jane Austen's classic romance and spills over with great performances from the likes of Bill Nighy and The Crown's Josh O'Connor, though it's a spectacularly droll Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role who truly takes the cake. Number 7 is Kajillionaire, directed by Miranda July. A sunny bystander, played by Gina Rodriguez, wanders into the circumscribed world of two aging L.A. grifters, played by Richard Jenkins and Deborah Winger, and their grown daughter, played by Evan Rachel Wood. The financial stakes may be low, but July, me and you and everyone we know, makes it feel like millions emotionally. Number 8, One Night in Miami, directed by Regina King. Though it takes a minute to shake off the constraints of its stage roots, King's slow burner about the stranger-than-fiction convergence of four black superstars at Cassius Clay's 1964 title bout becomes both an illuminating snapshot of the era and a sort of acting Olympics for its outrageously talented stars. Number 9, Promising Young Woman, directed by Emerald Fennell. Hell hath no fury, it's true, but Fennell's eviscerating, darkly comic debut is no mere candy-coated portrait of a woman scorned. As a self-appointed one-girl wrecking crew named Cassie, Carrie Mulligan takes on misogyny one noxious dude bro at a time. She's a knockout, too, and so is the ending. Number 10. Dick Johnson is Dead, directed by Kristen Johnson. Dick, retired therapist, dedicated Seventh-day Adventist, zippy octogenarian, becomes the muse of his documentarian daughter and one of the year's least likely movie stars in the sweetly surreal Dead, a fantastical true-life experiment in which deep fakes become the sincerest form of parental love. The Worst, Prestige Movies Gone Bad. Capone, directed by Josh Trank. How it started. A sobering portrait of the last days of the world's most notorious gangsters. How it ends. A putty-nosed Tom Hardy, mumble raging and filling his adult diaper to the brim. The Last Thing He Wanted, directed by Dee Reese. A lauded Joan Didion novel adapted by Mudbound Reese and starring Anne Hathaway and Ben Affleck. And alas, for all its pedigree, a murky, baffling mess. Hillbilly Elegy, directed by Ron Howard. This ham-handed adaptation of J.D. Vance's Lightning Rod 2016 memoir hits every smug, unsubtle note. Appalachian poverty porn recast as a moralizing soap opera. Irresistible, directed by Jon Stewart. It should have been a home run in a year like this. A master satirist riffing on the absurdity of modern politics with Steve Carell and Rose Byrne. But oh, what a lead balloon. #resist. The Witches. Ask not why Zemeckis felt compelled to remake Roald Dahl's classic tale when a perfect 1990 film version already exists. No, seriously, don't ask. Trials and Errors. No traditional studio managed to weather the crushing blow the pandemic dealt to movie theaters, by Tyler Aquilina. Hollywood blockbusters aren't dead, but they are homeless. For nearly a year in our hazy state of lockdown, no studio could figure out how to release event movies in the COVID-19 era. As most other tentpoles migrated to 2021 and beyond, Warner Brothers forged ahead with a theatrical release for Christopher Nolan's Tenet, betting the lack of competition would work in its favor. The thriller ultimately grossed about $350 million worldwide, respectable, if not enough to break even, but less than the $60 million domestically. The director's previous two films, Dunkirk and Interstellar, each grossed more than three times that in North America. And Tenet is now available on home media, which can't help but feel like an admission of defeat. Meanwhile, Disney dropped the $200 million Mulan on Disney Plus for a premium price, following the path of low and mid-budget films like The King of Staten Island to PVOD. There's still no official data available on how Mulan or other PVOD titles performed, but it's telling that Disney opted for Pixar's Soul to stream this Christmas without the extra price tag. Not to be outdone, Warner Brothers will end 2020 with yet another strategy. Release Wonder Woman 1984 in theaters and on HBO Max simultaneously. Hamilton and Borat 2, arguably 2020's two biggest movies, have proved that films can find success on streaming, but subscriptions can't equal a billion-dollar box office run. Hence, why multiplexes remain in play despite rising case numbers. With a growing backlog on studio hands, this may be the only path left. Best movie moment: Invisible Man's killer move. In the last movie that many filmgoers saw in a theater, one horrifyingly tense scene was burned into our brains by Clark Colas. The horror thriller The Invisible Man contains many jaw-dropping sequences as Elizabeth Moss's unhinged heroine, Cecilia, is terrifyingly harassed by her psychotic ex-boyfriend, Adrian, played by Oliver Jackson Cohen, the titular unseen gent. But none were as shocking as the scene in which the invisible Adrian uses a knife to slice the throat of Cecilia's sister Emily, played by Harriet Dyer, in a crowded restaurant while Moss's character looks on in horror. Writer-director Leigh Whannell of Upgrade chose to set the scene in a busy eatery to lull cinema-goers into a false sense of security. I wanted something that felt safe, so when the throat slashing happened, the audience would be knocked on their arse, says the director, who shot it at EST, a restaurant in Sydney, Australia. Dyer's graphic neck wound was a prosthetic appliance. As for the knife, it was controlled by an extremely visible green suit-clad man who was removed in post-production. There was a man in a unitard crouching under the table and fake blood being pumped through the prosthetic neck, says Whannell. Harriet and Elizabeth were crying with laughter. No one was laughing, however, when a test audience watched the scene for the first time. It was exactly the reaction you would hope for, says Whannell, whose film was one of the last to be released before cinemas closed in the spring. It's so quick that some people don't even know it's happened. You get the first bunch of people saying, oh my gosh, then it ripples through the audience. It's very fun to see that kind of audience participation. I haven't sat in a theater with other people for so long. It feels like a lifetime. So shout out to some great performances this year. We have Bill Murray on the rocks. Cheater, charmer, charlatan, as the philandering art dealer father to a flailing Rashida Jones in Sofia Coppola's champagne-fizzy New York fantasy, Murray is all of those things and more. The unmissable Bill. Delroy Lindo, The Five Bloods, in a Spike Lee joint filled to bursting with big issues and sillier plot lines and wild scenery, Lindo's fierce portrayal of a returning Vietnam vet still gripped by PTSD holds the quiet center of the film, decades of pain and rage distilled in his unbroken gaze. Candace Bergen, Let Them All Talk. When your castmates are Meryl Streep and Diane Wiest, the bar is already impossibly high. Somehow, though, Bergen's spangled, striving Texas bachelorette manages to steal nearly every scene she has in the Steven Soderbergh's Wry High Seas dramedy. Now for the year's best TV shows in 2020. And number one is Better Call Saul on AMC. All along, we've been asking the wrong question. How did Jimmy McGill, played by Bob Odenkirk, become Saul Goodman? No, the real mystery at the heart of Better Call Saul is this. Where does Kim Wexler go from here? The brilliant, perfectly ponytailed lawyer, played by Ray Seahorn, criminally Emmy-less, is now the mist of her own transformation, from Jimmy's moral compass to his invaluable, life-saving accomplice. Jimmy and Kim are the rarest of TV couples. They are pragmatic soulmates, realists in love, and partners in life. As Saul heads into its final season, the fate of Kim Wexler, dazzling legal mind, thrill-seeker, drug lord silencer, brings new urgency to a saga that already ended way back in 2013 with Breaking Bad. Whatever turn Kim's takes in the end, she'll always be Saul's better half. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Elizabeth Smith, reading from Entertainment Weekly, January 2021 issue. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, warmer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
For the lighter side of local news, Recording Library of West Texas brings you the Lifestyle Show. Features from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. We'll feature fun local stories about people in our community, plus columns such as gardening and food. The Lifestyle Show, Friday mornings at 6 and repeated Sunday nights at 7:30 and Thursdays at 4:30 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will soon administer the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. For updates, details, or to register, visit mchodessa.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549. That's 432-582-8549. Walgreens is currently delivering vaccinations to long-term care facilities and will have vaccines for the public sometime in 2021. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores will soon have the no-cost COVID-19 vaccine available. They will administer in a phased approach based on state guidelines when available to pharmacies.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 51 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.